Garza, Johnny Impact, Team Small Change. You got DNA tonight, Drake and Adonis. Yeah. But look, man, here's the deal. You got to consider, when you look around wrestling these days, you got people who, it's more about style than substance. You got two guys on the opposite side of the ring staring us in the eye, and they are the epitome of that. Style over substance. Eli Drake, that's simplicity, but it's effective. And that's what matters, and that's why I am the global champion. That answer all your questions.
Hayes, since last week, has anything produced? That's kind of a weird way to say it, but has anything happened in the life of Mr. CEO Hayes?
Nothing except, yeah, nothing outside the norm. It's been just a lot of the normal day-to-day activities. So, yeah, nothing special, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it.
Unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you look at it. I mean, that's kind of the same thing. I'm in the same boat. You know, it's funny. I talk to my parents insist on a phone call every week, and, you know, that's fine. Love them for it. They support me. You know, love my family. When it comes down to it, my life does not change from last Tuesday night to this Tuesday night when I'm going to call you. It's like, look, I get up, I go to work, and I come home, I watch some wrestling, I drink a few beers. I normally omit the beers part when I'm talking to my parents, but I do all that, and then I just go to bed. I wake up, and I do the same thing the next day. It's not, you know, it is what it is. I mean, that's life, I guess. Am I right? I mean, am I boring, or is that just that's just life?
That's just life. I mean, the only thing that makes usually just the random day entertaining for me are my kids, my wife when she feels like being bothered with me, and wrestling and podcasting. Like that's it. Outside of that, it's just the normal day. And even podcasting at this point has just become part of the routine. So while I have a lot of fun doing it, I don't even look at it as outside the norm now. It's just built into the way I schedule my week.
And it's just like this, you know, tonight I had a good friend of mine who's, you know, he had a nice, good photography show. It was opening up tonight. And, you know, I couldn't attend because I was like, we're on the road to Bound for Glory. I have to commit to the however many fans are listening to this. I don't know. Hayes, you know the numbers, but I'm not aware. I have a commitment to make, and we're on the road to Ottawa, and I gotta be on board with it. And so, we all gotta make sacrifices here on Bound for Glory, such as sacrificing me watching countless other things that could potentially be better than what I watched tonight. To be completely honest,
yeah, I could watch some of that fake news that our president's always talking about.
Why bother?
True. But that's kind of how I feel about Impact. Speaking of, can we please just get a name? Like can we get a complete rebrand? Like this whole everything about this name, Impact, like the color scheme, maybe even the ring. Just do away with all of it. Come back with new ideas. I don't know. Have them wrestle in the damn pig pen. I don't know.
Well, you mentioned it over text when we were watching the episode. These belts, I mean, I don't know if we've missed something, but there hasn't been a formal announcement to change any of the belts, and they still bear this Global Force sort of branding, especially that Global Championship. I mean, that's a Jeff Jarrett belt, and nobody respects that thing. So, I mean, when you texted me that, I would hope that the plan is to do something at Bound for Glory to change the state of their belts, but just fucking A, look at the state of their belts. It's not great.
Yeah, I mean, and you had them come out, announce that they're officially separating their partnership with GFW. Jeff Jarrett's out, but yet these titles still, I mean, they're basically the titles he came up with. But besides the X Division title and the Impact Grand Championship, which I'm not even sure why that's still a thing, like, and I mean, let's even throw in the Impact Grand Championship. Like, that still bears the logo of, what, two rebrands ago? Like, this it's just outdated. Everything about this show is outdated. It's just, for someone who actually watches the product and pays attention, week to week, it's just really bothersome, the state of a lot of things in this show. Eli Drake's great, though.
Well, absolutely. Of course. I mean, the title of our show. But at the end of the day, it's a lot of things are outdated, and it's comprehensive in the outdatedness of this show. I mean, certain aspects like piping in booze, doing things like that, having a guy named Johnny Impact, naming him after the title of your show, like, and thinking that that could get over. I mean, that's so outdated. That's just outdated thinking, and it's unfortunate. You know, I mean, you've got the same guys that do the outdated thinking that come in WWE, and then ultimately when they get, you know, truly outdated to Impact, you know, to do the same old outdated shit. And I, you know, I've turned a corner, and I don't know how good that we haven't really talked, you know, nuts and bolts about this creative team since they came on. We had a lot of excitement about Scott D'Amore, Dutch Mantel coming back into this company, doing a lot of, you know, rejuvenating some spirit in this company and in the creative facet of the company that maybe had been lacking, and reflecting upon since they've been here and since they've joined the company. I mean, what do you make of their term here in Impact amidst the tumultuous nature of the company? Granted, of course, I mean, this company has been in flux for a long time, but given all that, they do have a show to produce week to week, and has that show lived up to your expectations of what they could produce creatively?
It doesn't, and I don't know whose fault is that. Like, it's easy to blame the writing. It's easy to blame the head of creative, but, I mean, keep in mind, Jeff Jarrett was over creative, and whenever that dissolved and he went away, you can kind of understand maybe some things that they were setting up didn't get to go all the way through because of that. But even after that, Jeff Jarrett's been away from this company, and even though they're just now officially separating from it, but he's been out of this company for, a couple of months now? You should have been able to pull it together, get ready for Bound for Glory in that time, and they just haven't. Like, everything in this build to this company it hasn't been good. It hasn't been good. And that's the one thing that GFW had a year and a half ago that they don't now, is competent writing. The writing was so good in the old TNA era, and it's just gone to complete shit.
And I don't know, it's interesting. I mean, when you reflect on certain aspects of the writing in the old TNA, I don't know if I would say comprehensively that the writing of the old TNA era was all over great. I mean, there's certainly, I mean, just awesomely built feuds, you know, great matches. I mean, we could laundry list them. But on the other hand, we could also laundry list throughout TNA's history some bad feuds and some bad writing decisions. And it's just, you wonder whenever you look back upon, you know, and you look back upon TNA's history and you see, like, you know, Orlando Jordan, whenever they had the pseudo Monday Night Wars, where he just walked out and sprayed himself with cream and, you know, posed in front of a bisexual flag. It was just like these kinds of off the chain awful gimmicks that, like, it's not going to produce heat either way. People are just going to be confused, like, to that degree of bad writing. And that's the same stat that, you know, that was a Dutch Mantel, you know, era of creativity in that company, and you now see it here today. And I just wonder if there's a string connecting the two. I don't want to cast bad omens on anybody, but it's just flat creative right now. And you have guys that were in charge of other eras where there were hot stories with, you know, characters such as Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe that you don't have anymore, and now you don't have those guys. They're struggling to create hot stories again. And I wonder to the degree of which they were the manufacturers of those stories back in the day, as opposed to the guys that they were creating the stories for, such as your Angle and your Joe.
You know, that makes a lot of sense when you sit back and think of it. But I mean, TNA did do a lot. I mean, just look at where some of that talent is now. Like, you got Jay Lethal, who at one point was the man in ROH. He's since been booted down. AJ Styles, who is the man in SmackDown. Bobby Roode, Samoa Joe. Like, they had some great, great talent, and now they're all being noticed. Unfortunately, it's outside of the company. And, you know, is it one signing away? Or is this company at the point now to where are any big names actually going to come to this company? And if not, then how do you build those new stars? They have a lot of talent in this roster. I think Desmond Xavier could be it in that X division. They have a lot of talent that they don't decide to use them right. And this whole Trevor Lee storyline they're doing now, I have my issues with that. But they have talent here. So whatever they need to do to get the creative side together to help build that talent, somebody needs to come in. They need a savior. I don't know who it's going to be. Do you think it's going to be somebody who's already here internally, or do you think somebody else needs to take over creative yet again?
Well, I mean, like, I don't know. And the thing is that what you're saying is that, like, we had the talent, or, you know, not we, but, like, you know, this company, Impact, TNA/Impact/GFW, what the fuck ever it is. It's like they had the talent then. But, like, that's what I was saying. They had the talent, but sometimes the talent just got themselves over at the expense of the shitty writing that they were given. True. Now, the talent at this point, they're not performing in front of an audience that is necessarily tuned in to Impact week to week. It's a fucking terrible Universal Studios crowd. The shit does not tour, and so they don't have an audience that's invested in it at all. So nobody can get over organically, and they're left with the shit writing that is just leaving them in the mud. But anyway, I mean, when it comes to the talent that is here right now, and what gives me hope that after Bound for Glory, when we move to Canada, we get a fresh audience, potentially tours down the road, something that's going to inject a life into the, not to the company, but into the wrestling aspect of this company, which has been lost over the course of their time in Universal Studios of the past few years, is that, like, this company is now moving up into an area where wrestling is hot. Crowds are always hot in Canada, and you're moving up into Ottawa. They repeatedly sold out the allotments of tickets that they have set forth, and they continue to expand the allotting of tickets that they're putting out there, and they keep selling it out because this crowd's going to be hot, and it's going to be interesting to see which wrestlers are going to get over, which wrestlers are not. I personally, if this crowd is going to be a sort of smart crowd, if you will, which I would imagine it's going to be. I think that the interest level is there as to what this new regime is going to be amongst smart fans. And those that live in that area are probably going to attend. So I think it's going to be a smart crowd. And you wonder if guys like Johnny Impact, a guy named after the company with a generic babyface promo and boring glasses, is really going to get over versus a guy like Eli Drake, who everybody describes as a cross between Austin and Rock. He's a fucking phenomenal heel that's smart fans absolutely love. So you wonder how the dynamics of the creative and the dynamics of how they write this show week to week will really change in front of a live audience.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. In front of a live audience, it could do wonders. I mean, on top of that too, you have to think that young guys who are coming in and who don't necessarily have a script, like, for example, Mike Bennett was solid on the mic here in TNA. He didn't really do anything in WWE because of the script. You have to put people out there so that they can find their own voice. And even if they stumble at first, even if, you know, maybe you get an awkward promo at first, that them going in the back after that and being able to break that down could help them in the future. This company overall, whatever it said, they just need to take more chances. That's just period, point blank. Without getting into the details of creative and how you write characters in this, take more chances, sign people you trust, and then trust those guys to go out there and figure it out. That's it. Just let them figure it out. And especially nowadays with indie wrestling being what it is, these guys can go and wrestle anywhere. Like, just being able to wrestle almost nowadays isn't the same as what it used to be. TNA isn't at that place anymore. It doesn't have that freshness anymore either. So how do you provide that? How do you manufacture freshness? Is by keeping new faces and letting them do and try new and inventive things.
And an essential part of that is being in front of that fresh audience, because my God, how many times have they rebranded and tried to freshen things up, but they have never freshened things up outside of Universal Studios. Now they have a venue with which they can really, truly freshen things up in front of an audience that's going to be receptive of them actually freshening things up, because it's a fresh audience. You're there to impress them. It's first impressions all around, really. I mean, it's a blank slate when they move out of Universal Studios up to Ottawa. It really feels that way. They've got one night and a set of tapings to prove it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they're doing. But we can't move too far ahead. We do have this week and next week to go over. But, I mean, that's that being said. So I'm looking forward to seeing everything that you said performed in front of a live audience, because the live audience is so essential to getting over.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, getting away from Orlando is going to hopefully be good for this company. And then moving around, doing minimal traveling is going to help too. So, you know, and we've said that every week too. As much as we've talked about how bad certain aspects are in this company, we have talked about, you know, them trying. They're putting themselves in a good business position. Anthem seems to be smart businessmen. It's just that the creative in the show needs to get better. But, you know, they're set up at least in a favorable way to where you think you can see through the cloud, so to say. I guess that's the best way I can put it right now.
Yeah, I mean, got to see through the clouds at most points when you're following this company. And I will say, I do realize I keep saying a live audience when going up to Ottawa. It's not that I expect Impact's that's going to be recorded live. Of course not. I'm just saying the crowd's actually going to be alive, which is a stark difference to what we have here in Orlando. One last thing before we actually do get into the episode. Officially this past week, even though, you know, it's been kind of obvious to anybody that's been following the company, officially this past week, Impact parted ways with Global Force and Jeff Jarrett. And also, related to that, Jeff Jarrett has checked in, supposedly, into rehab. So, big stories of the past week. Ultimately, it is sort of a tragic story when it comes to Jeff Jarrett as a man and just as a person. Like, it's just it's very tough to see somebody go down that, experience that kind of thing, and of course that's tragic. But the parting with Global Force, which I think that his downfall personally was integral to that. But in a vacuum outside of his personal downfall, in trying to analyze how Global Force is, or excuse me, Impact is going to operate without Global Force, without considering the fact that, unfortunately, that partnership was severed due to a man's personal struggles, which I think it's important to underline that partnership ultimately was severed due to his own struggles, which is unfortunate. I don't think it would have happened otherwise. But getting away from that, purely in the vacuum that Impact is parting from Global Force, this surely has to be a good thing for this company moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, Jeff Jarrett is in rehab now, so, you know, prayers and wishes go out to him that he can get himself together and in a better place. Not to do with anything with wrestling, just to do with life. But as far as the company, Impact the company, you know, It's sometimes it could be good, you know, to get a fresh start. I will say this. I've always said Jeff Jarrett does have some innovative ideas. Sometimes he's batshit crazy and an opportunist, but he has always had some pretty fresh ideas when it comes to wrestling. He knows wrestling very well. Now, is Dutch Mantel going to be able to pick up that mantle and run with it? I don't know. I tend to believe that he can, but then you have to fully trust in him. But, you know, I would almost rather see, like, someone with almost a fresh take. And Dutch Mantel knows wrestling, don't get me wrong, but he's very old guard. And I don't know, with this company, I just want to see a breath of fresh air coming in. You know, sometimes some people who've been around the company, been around the business for a long time, can still come up with fresh ideas. So I'm not saying that he can't. I just want to see something different for this company. And I keep saying that. I'm going to keep pushing that home until it happens, which may be never.
Well, I'm disappointed that a certain individual who was fired from WWE for posing with the Bullet Club, I'm sort of disappointed that no murmurs were created about him joining them with Impact. That would have been sweet.
Yeah. One would say that would be too, you know what, let's not, we don't want any cease and desist. So one sweet, that would have been one sweet.
Before we even get a cease and desist from either party, the Bullet Club or the WWE, we should probably just get into this Impact episode, shouldn't we?
Yeah, 20 minutes in, let's do it.
Eli Drake. Hasta la muerte después.
I'm Allie.
Folks, welcome to Let Me Talk To You.
The best guy here, the best guy there, the best guy anywhere.
On the Wrestling World Podcast Network.
What I'm telling you.
Listen, slap ass.
Let me talk to you.
All right, folks, here for Impact Wrestling on It's October 26th, 2017, the penultimate episode of Impact leading into Bound for Glory. Can you believe it, folks? I can't either. We are starting off with highlights because it's Impact, and we can't record anything because we have no money. there's the highlights. Then we see Lashley and then ATT arriving, and then they're contrasted with Moose and Stefan Bonner arriving. Cool. You're arriving for the tapings. Great. We have highlights from the Impact and AAA feud, and then we go to the Crash promotion with Phantasma and Tejano versus EC3 and James Storm. Like I said, Matthews actually points out that this is the penultimate episode of Impact. My God, Hayes, does this really feel like the penultimate episode of Impact before Mania? And when, especially looking, and we could just zoom out to the end of this episode and look at it as a broader scale, this was not the penultimate episode of a show leading up to their biggest show of the year.
It was not. This was more like, if we're going to compare it to the other company, this was kind of like maybe the build to Roadblock. I don't even know what to say. Like, it just didn't feel like any, there was nothing special in the show at all. We did get some good matches over the course of this show, but yeah, not as a lead into the biggest show of the year. So,
well, this match was certainly not one of the better matches on the show. If I do say so myself, it might have been the worst thing on the show, because this match was just all over the place. Truthfully, I wrote in my notes that I have no idea what's going on because the commentary didn't help at all, which is an essential part of it. But I feel like the commentary was watching the same film footage that we were watching, and the camera work did not help anything at all because every time, because it was a tag match, so two people would be paired off over in one side and then two people would be paired off in another. And when one pair would, one person would start beating up on the other, they'd immediately start cutting to the other pair. So you couldn't see what the fuck was actually happening on either side of the ring, anywhere around. And so this just kind of wandered around. It was slow, soft. EC3 did a couple flare-style flops, but it's just like, was it really ultimately entertaining? It was funny at first, but then it was just like comically HBK level overselling. Ultimately, Tejano turned on Phantasma by grabbing his ankles amidst the run of the ropes. Phantasma hit some crazy looking driver. It wasn't a tombstone, but it was like, it was crazy looking on EC3, and it should have been the end of the match, but Tejano pulled him off to try and steal the pin, but then they went back and forth, bickered. James Storm hit the last call on Phantasma. And then he won. This was trash.
Yeah, garbage. Complete and utter garbage. I don't know if, like, they gave, like, some kids cameras who were in the crowd and were like, hey, do you want to film a wrestling show? Because the way it was filmed was complete and utter. The match wasn't much better either. And then when you consider the fact of who was in this match, I mean, these guys are all veterans. So, I don't know, man. This is just not a good way. Not a good way to start your show off at all, in my opinion. But what do I know? I'm just some mark with a podcast.
It was hilarious to me that they actually went to a place with a crowd that was there to watch wrestling, and they still couldn't even get a match with a crowd reacting to the match itself because this crowd was so dead, save for like some vuvuzelas sounding kind of things here and there. But after that, we get a backstage. Eli Drake is on the phone. Dutch Mantel is whining about him not giving enough interviews and being, not there for some media shit. Eli says he's above interviews because, of course, no shit. Eli's, of course he's above interviews. It's about fucking time that these guys started respecting Eli Drake's schedule. He's a busy man.
He is a busy man. He is the champion of this just wonderful company. Who do you think he was on the phone with? Because I have some speculation there.
Oh, I didn't even look into the phone call much more than, I don't know, some girl up in Ottawa. He's trying to make his Ottawa girl. I don't know. That's all I assume.
I think he was on the phone with Patron. That's just my opinion. I think Patron, this is going to be Patron's end, but maybe I'm just looking too much into that.
Can we please not ruin Eli Drake with Alberto L. Patron. I cannot stand that motherfucker, and I don't want, and we've talked about this, I don't want to see him in this company. I don't want to see him in any company. I think he's a scumbag, and I cannot willingly fucking support any fucking anything that's associated with, like, he's just a piece of shit, and I don't, like, I don't know. I don't feel comfortable watching that guy.
You get no arguments out of me there. Me and you share that opinion on one Alberto El Patron, or however you said it so much better than I can.
You just said Alberto El Patron. Like Patron. It's like a Patron. It's yeah. Patron. Patron. Whatever. Come on.
Yeah.
Roll
tequila.
Tequila. Hey, for what it's worth, I'm drinking a Corona. So it's a hold on. Never mind. I've had too many Coronas. Oh, there we go. I did. Coronas. I can do it sometime.
Yeah, but I think it was Alberto. But nonetheless, I mean, Eli Drake here, and you know, let's just go ahead and talk about the whole, all these backstage segments. He killed it. Like, he is so great, and I understand everybody's going to pull out comparisons to The Rock. You hear people say he's just doing a Rock impression. But guess what, people? If that's what he's doing, which it's not, I mean, yes, he's there's a lot of Rock influence there, but he's killing it. Like, his line delivery, his facial expressions, like, when I always forget the lady who does the backstage interviews, but when she, the look of annoyance on his face before he decided to talk, when he just, like, looked over his shoulder at her, cracked me the hell up, because it just, he's great, man. He's a freaking gem in this just dirt ball of a company.
Dirt ball of a company. Man, dirt Hayes, ball. tell me how you really fucking feel, my guy. Jesus.
Yeah. I have a love-hate relationship with Impact Wrestling right now. It's I'm almost like a scorned lover, because I love this company for so long, and now it's just sent to utter shit when they finally do have a pretty good roster, and they have this guy, Eli Drake, who is amazing. And I just wish that the company was in a better place, because if you would pluck Eli Drake out of where he is now and put him in TNA when they were kind of in their heyday, this guy would be all over the place. And he should be bigger than what he is, because he's amazing.
Brother, did you mean the heyday back in like 2012 when I was running the company, brother? You know, like putting the Hulkamania across the Hulkamaniacs all across Orlando, Florida, brother.
Speaking of, we got a Hulk
no
Hogan.
No way, he's getting over in my era, brother.
We got a Hulk Hogan sighting today, and this is when, like, I had walked out of the room, I think, to like get something to drink and walk back in when they showed that old clip of Hulk as Josh Perry dies in the background.
That's a tough impression, brother. Need that Corona, brother.
Oh, that's gold.
What were you saying, brother?
I was saying, I walked out the room and I came back and I saw Hawk on the TV, and I'm like, what? And I immediately picked up my phone and started texting, like, did you know? And then I realized what was happening. I was like, oh, crap, I got excited for no reason.
Yo, but that was so funny, because it was like this flashback. Straight up, my throat kind of hurt. It was this fucking flashback to, like, it was a whole advertisement sponsored by this company. Like, it was a sponsored segment, a flashback, and it was a Hulk Hogan entrance. And then it's, like, he made 5 steps, posed a crowd shot, and that was the end of this commercial. You guys paid for a Hulk Hogan entrance. Terry Bollea is laughing it up.
Well, the funny thing is, too, is that with the way that this show was going to, like, Crash and Border City Wrestling, like, it just, I was like, where is all this happening at? And yeah, I immediately got shot down when I realized it was commercial, but I got so excited there for a moment, and yeah. That's my fault for it to expect anything exciting to come out this dirt ball of a company.
Dude, you spoiled the next segment. Well, not the next segment. We'll get to it later. I was really excited to talk about the fact that we actually tuned in to Border City Wrestling Impact tonight. But we'll get into that later. Because Dutch is backstage, or not backstage. He's in the office with Scott D'Amore. Dutch is whining about Eli. Cornette comes in and whines about Eli. D'Amore leaves. and Dutch and Cornette look like they're conspiring against Eli. Honest to God, you know, Dutch suggests that, or one of the two suggests that they could actually, you know, do their own bidding if Eli didn't have the belt on them, and they could actually have somebody that would do media appearances. So it cuts away with them agreeing that if they took the belt off of him, then they could do the media. So it looks to me like they're conspiring against him to take the belt off of him. One note that I will make before we get, into the next segment. I was watching this with a variety of different people. I had it on the main TV in the common room of my apartment. And so for the first hour or so, I was watching it with my roommate Jasmine, and she's a somewhat new wrestling fan. She likes to watch it when I'm there. The first time she's watched Impact, her impression of Eli Drake, I asked her of it. She said, "He is a giant douche, and I can't stand him. He reeks of wealth, and I can't relate to him. I think he's a dick." So, man, she's not down with our fucking homeboy. I was shocked.
Well, that just goes to show that this dirtball of a company is not... No, let me not blame it on that. I mean, Eli Drake is an acquired taste. I can see that, especially for a new wrestling fan, if they're not used to the over-the-topness or the douchiness of him. He is a douche, but he's a douche for a purpose.
No. Hayes, you're supposed to say that she's a fucking idiot and that Eli Drake is the god.
I'm being nice.
Why would you ever be nice?
If she downloads this podcast, like, and this is her first wrestling podcast, does she need to hear two smarks calling her a dumbass? We can work our way up to that.
For fuck's sakes, Hayes, grow a pair. For God's sakes, I mean, get with the program here, okay? I mean, we gotta tell people how it is, okay? I mean, you're one of these PC fucking motherfuckers. No, I'm playing. Where are we, Hayes? Let's just move on. Let's move on to Border City fucking wrestling, Hayes. Are you happy that we tuned in on a Thursday night to watch Border City Wrestling live Hold on. Where was Border City Wrestling from? What city was this in?
Wasn't it Ottawa? Remember?
Oh, my God. But it was like a small, like part of Ottawa. I don't even remember, but it was someplace that I do not even remember. Oh, Windsor, Ontario. Where's Windsor? Tell me where Windsor is. We are reporting live from Windsor, Ontario, Canada for a Border City Impact.
Oh, man. God, how this company is falling. But continue, Josh Perry.
Phil Atlas and Brett Baggs. Phil Atlas and Brett Baggs against OVE. And guess who? This whole match, which was featured on Impact Wrestling, guess who was centered on the whole match? Phil Atlas and Brett Baggs. They kicked the fuck. They beat the shit out of OVE and they dominated this match. And Brett Baggs looked like a star, and Phil Atlas had a lot of tattoos. And so this match was pretty decent, but yeah, great way to put over your tag team champs, guys, by having two absolute unknowns look like stars against them, and then your tag team champs win on a fluke finisher win. I mean, this match was an awful way of putting over OVE.
Yeah, it was, but who cares about OVE, really? It's just whatever. So, me being the great reporter that I am, I went on to BorderCityWrestling.com, and I'm just taking a look. They advertise basically all the damn Impact roster. Let's look at their roster. One Allie, former Knockouts champion, is on this roster. Pete Dunne, the WWE UK champion, is on the Border City Wrestling roster. Rey Mysterio, Petey Williams, Rosemary, Sienna, Taryn Terrell, and Tito Santana. Thoughts?
Oh, man. That's like, who knew that Border City Impact, live from Windsor, had a fucking lineup like that, man? Holy shit, we're going to get the Border City Wrestling Impact Anthology coming on the GWN here soon, man.
Oh, man. Oh, wait, and then I missed them. Congo Kong is also. Moose is on this roster. Mysterious Movado, we don't know who that is. Phil Atlas, of course.
Of course we don't know who he is. He's mysterious. And Phil Atlas, of course, the heart and soul of the company.
Yeah. This is an amazing roster. Like, we're watching the wrong company. We need to stop watching Impact Wrestling, and we need to watch Border City Impact Wrestling.
My roommate Jasmine said of OVE's finisher, it's unbelievable, but in a bad way. Like, it's not believable.
Wait a second. That's great. Much like OVE, the tag team.
Yeah, and they didn't even come out with their Halloween masks. It's the season, guys. Come on.
If this company was in a better place, wouldn't that be like the perfect merch to be pushing during Halloween? You have this act that wears masks, but yet we can't buy any of it. And whatever. It's been well documented. Impact Wrestling's their merch sales suck.
Stephen Bonner and Moose come out, which are surely gonna increase the merch sales. Stephen Bonner goes over his MMA record, but I don't think either of them realize that it's a wrestling match. So, you know. We'll cut to back to Eli. He's backstage. Some troglodytes come by and try to set up an interview with him, and he's busy. Of course he's fucking busy. These fucking troglodytes don't understand the world of pressure the Impact Global Champion is in on a Thursday night. My God. But then we cut to the best thing all night. It's Pro Wrestling Noah in Japan. We got Eddie Edwards and we got Mara Fuji. Man, oh man. We didn't get the whole match. A lot of edited clips. But this, what we got, was fucking awesome. Blue Thunder Bomb by Eddie for two. We got a super kick and an angle slam from Mara Fuji. No sold by Eddie. And then they exchange suplexes that were countered over and over. They go outside. Eddie suicide dives Mara Fuji and lands hard. Looks like he landed on his fucking head. Cut to Mara Fuji giving him a pile driver on the side of the ring. On the ring. Okay. You've watched enough wrestling. Then he cuts to a Spanish fly to the ring. That was for a two count. Then Eddie gives Fuji a run and a party for a two. Then a power bomb for a two. It was too fast for my notes. I've got misspells everywhere here. And then Eddie hits his finisher, which I didn't even know what his finisher was called. They said it too fast and they didn't show a replay. But goddamn, I wish I got the whole match. It was fucking awesome.
Yeah, this was a great match. You can definitely catch it on Noah Great Voyage in Yokohama Volume 2. So check that out if you want to see the full match.
All right, thank you, Meltzer. Appreciate you.
Fuck you. I hate you, Josh. I hate you. Well, you know what? It's better. I guess you could have called me whatever that piece of crap Alvarez, because then I would have had a murder. I would have come through Skype and murdered you if you would have called me Brian Alvarez. Those are fighting words.
Well, you know, Hayes, I mean, it's just these couple geeks out here. I mean, like, you just got all these Impact guys there out here in Florida, and they just look like a bunch of fucking geeks there, and then you just cut to a bunch of indie shows around the country. What kind of fucking national coverage are you even doing right now? For God's sakes, Hayes. Fucking terrible.
That's a great impression, by the way, Joshy.
Absolutely awful of an impression, but I appreciate your support. The commenters, they were going back to Windsor for more Border City Wrestling, and they hype it up like it's a fucking big deal, and it is now, because I know Border City's roster. We're going back to Border City, Hayes, but first, we gotta go to OVE, for Christ's sakes. They got a stupid little promo where they say LAX can bring their family, but they're gonna bring their own. And then we get a shot of some dude, his shoulder and his arm. And then he gives us a thumbs down because OVE is lame as flying fuck. This is how they introduced the fact that they're bringing out somebody. So OVE's got a mystery guy, family member, person coming in at Bound for Glory, and I couldn't give less of a fuck if you tried.
You don't know who's gonna be?
What do you?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is like a non-spoiler show, dude, and I don't know who it's gonna be. So,
let's move on.
Your call. I mean, shit. Do you want? I mean, you know, is it you? All right. Just tell me this. Is it good enough of a reveal for me to actually wait until Bound for Glory, or is it shitty enough for you to give me it right now and just get my live reaction?
Well, okay. So it's not anybody like just crazy top notch, but it's definitely someone who fits the way that they're trying to push OVE. I'm personally excited about who it is because I enjoy their work, but again, it's not anyone who's top notch or anything. He's a very good hand.
Well, in that case, I'll wait for Bound for Glory then. Fair enough. I feel like you've got me too hyped for this. I feel like it's going to let me down. I'll be honest with you. You've got me. Never mind. So, actually, before we go back to Border City Wrestling, which is, of course, what we're all waiting for at this point, Mackenzie Mitchell is trying to talk to Eli Drake. He says that Garza and Johnny Mundo, I'm going to call him Johnny Mundo. I'm not calling him Johnny Impact. I'm sorry. I'm calling him Johnny Mundo. Garza and Mundo are all style over substance, which is a fact. Again, Eli Drake, you can't fault him for anything he said the whole episode. Garza and Mundo, they're all style over substance, and what Drake and Adonis do are absolute substance. And you can't disagree with any part of that, Hayes.
I will not disagree at all.
We cut to the crowd where Laurel Van Ness is giving alcohol to minors.
Hot Mess Van Ness, the national treasure, the gem, the apple of my eye, Hot Mess Van Ness, double fisting champagne, and like you said, promoting young alcoholics everywhere. What a way to just put this on your show, you dummies. Just got dummies. Go ahead, Josh, continue. I'm sorry.
No, Hayes, forget all that. We're about to go back to fucking Windsor for some Border City motherfucking wrestling, my guy. We got a tag match. Petey Williams is in it. Or it's not even a tag match. Pardon me, it's a four-way. And so I had to go online to find these names because, again, I couldn't write these down. Petey Williams versus Keo Mia versus Idris Abraham versus Tarek. Tarek! This match, I'll be honest with you, I missed a whole lot of it because a lot of people were coming in and out of the common area. I was saying hello. We were lighting blunts. It is what it is. But ultimately, we got to see the fucking Canadian Destroyer. There's nothing better than Petey Williams hitting the fucking Canadian Destroyer. Am I right?
You're right. It's a beautiful thing.
Thank you for your impact on that and the rest of the match, Hayes. I really appreciate you as a co-host.
You're welcome. The match was... Hey, the Canadian Destroyer is what made this match. We're in Border City Wrestling. Like, let's just take it in for what it is. Matter of fact, we forget, Petey Williams is on the roster of Border City Wrestling. So was he representing us, or was he representing Border City Wrestling then? Who knows? It doesn't matter. This match was crap. It was okay, but, you know, it is what it is. It was just here to fill time.
Hayes, when it comes to the Border City impending invasion of Impact, we'll see whose colors Petey Williams aligns with, okay?
We'll see.
When eventually they come to Windsor, and we'll see who actually aligns with BCW, if you will, Border City Wrestling, against Impact Wrestling. We'll see. You can even call it AIW, Anthem Impact Wrestling, BCW versus AIW.
It's going to happen. This is exactly what's going to happen. They're setting this up for another invasion angle, and they're moving to Canada. Josh, now I'm blaming you. If this happens, I don't care who wrote it. I'm coming right after you.
It's all across Saskatchewan, eh? And I'm spreading the love all across to my Canadian brothers up north. I want to move to your country. I kind of hate my own. Okay, we're going to move right on to the next segment here. It was actually a flashback to last week's main event, so fuck that. And then we move on to a Drake promo where he references Drake and Adonis as DNA. I'm here for it. It was a kind of a... excuse me. Still recovering from that Hulk Hogan impression. It was like this cool little promo where the light was just on his face and then a black backdrop. It really was kind of an old school approach. It was just kind of a minimalist kind of approach. It was cutting from one promo to the next, but it was all seated. There was no transitions or anything. Just all old school, hands off, kind of just let him do his thing. Best thing you could do with this guy. Eli Drake just perfectly suited to cut these old school backstage promos where you just camera in front of him, give him some bullet points and let him go. The Rock and Austin impressions, they come through and they've shined through this whole episode. This man with the belt is a commodity that this company cannot let go of come Bound for Glory.
Yeah, I mean, Eli Drake is the gem of this company. and he deserves it. And everything that he does, he's shined in every role, even the piece of crap stuff they were giving him at one point when we thought that he may never get close to this title. The guy has made everything gold, and yeah, he's perfect, like you said, perfectly suited for this type of promo. Hopefully this is something that they keep going in it, and it's not anything anyone else is doing, and it could just be his thing, that this is just what he does leading up to matches and when he's breaking down his opponents.
In contrast to Eli Drake, we get Johnny Mundo right after that, cutting just typical babyface promo. He has the lamest sunglasses you have ever fucking seen. I mean, those things are tragic.
They've taken away everything that made Johnny Mundo exciting, everything that made him feel like a big deal. He's just another schmuck here in Impact Wrestling. And I would have not guessed that when they got him. I was so excited when he was coming to this company, despite the name. And he has not been. Maybe the name change. Maybe he's using that as an angle to where Johnny Impact is not as exciting as Johnny Mundo. I don't know, because this guy is just, he's not the same guy you see on Lucha Underground every week. He's not the same guy you saw when he was back in WWE. He's not the same guy you'll see on the indies. There's no flair to him at all. Like, even when he comes out and does his entrance, everything about the way he's carried himself in this company just feels like he's just here to be here. He's basically Marshawn Lynch.
Well, all right, don't diss my boy Marshawn. All right, I'm a Raiders fan. Give me a break. He's an Oakland fucking boy. But that being said, I have one qualm with what you said, is that I think he, like, this is the incarnation of John Morrison that I think that was originally planned for him in WWE. And I just, look, I don't know the creative team, but honest to God, I don't know who was responsible for the John Morrison gimmick back then. I genuinely don't know, and I'm just flying off the seat of my pants, off the tip of my tongue, not even researching anything. I am sort of trying to make a connection between this iteration of Impact, which feels so dated, and comparing it to the original plan for John Morrison, the character John Morrison. This feels like this is the exact thing that they would have wanted to do with John Morrison back in whatever year he first debuted in, whatever he was planning to first debut in the company. Like, this feels over 10 years old.
Well, hey, recycling old characters that weren't even originally written for your company. Good job, Impact. Good job.
Garza Jr. and Mundo versus DNA, which is Drake and Adonis. Match was completely regular run-of-the-mill match. Eventually, first cool spot that I bothered to write down was Garza Jr. and Mundo hitting moonsaults in stereo to Eli Drake to get a near fall. A little bit after that, Drake hit a superplex to Garza for a near fall. Then after that, I mean, just generally, Mundo has a great face move set. It's everything about this guy feels just very... no part of his moveset is dated, but the concept of him is dated because his moveset is inherently face. The moves that he does are awe-inspiring. They're really cool, but it's it's nothing that is... His character is not something that's going to make you invested in the moves that he's making. So, for example, I don't know who else to compare, like, specifically the moves that he was making in this match to. But I don't know, maybe a Ricochet or something like that, where it's just like people are invested in Ricochet not only because, you know, he has a history of, you know, putting on these great matches. I'm not saying he cuts great promos, but it's just like he has a cadence about him that makes you want to root for him. And it's partially because he's protected from having to deliver promos. This Impact character, if he's not giving any promos at all, he's just walking out there doing these crazy moves and walking out and leaving. That's awesome, but we, you know, like we were just talking about, we have the backstage segment before where he cuts a lame promo, dons his lame glasses, and goes out there and then does these generic moves. These moves seem so much more generic because of his generic character. It's just, I don't know, it's just, there's the watering down of the essence of Johnny Mundo is, you know, it's just so, it was so palpable in this match to me, and... A little aside right there, but ultimately this match, just to get to the end, fast forward, a little bit of a distraction, it ends up on the floor, we have some roll-ups, eventually Adonis accidentally hit Eli Drake, and Johnny Impact rolled up Christopher Adonis for the win. Match went on for a while, couple of spots that were entertaining, but pretty a generic tag match, which, I mean, a generic tag match featuring the two guys that are fighting for your championship at your WrestleMania in the penultimate episode. You really wish for more as a fan of the show and as somebody that wants to get invested into this upcoming Bound for Glory pay-per-view.
I mean, this is just what to expect. I mean, there's nothing in the show that at all at this point that made you feel like it was going to be any different than a weekly episode of Impact, and it didn't feel like the lead up to Bound for Glory, and this definitely followed suit. What I will say here, though, to kind of piggyback off your comments on Johnny Impact, which I completely agree with, Garza Jr., I truly feel that he's on the cusp of breaking out. Like, everything about this guy, he hasn't talked much, so we don't know what he can or can't do on the mic. But as far as the way he carries himself in the ring, his moveset, the flair that he has, the way that the crowd seems to not completely pop for him, but they seem to be into the little things that he tries to do to get them into him in the match. I think this guy could be a star. I don't know his contract status. I don't know if he's one of the ones that's on loan or from AAA, or if he actually has a deal with Impact and Anthem. But I see a lot of promise in this kid. Josh?
Sorry, I forgot I was on mute. I know that we've talked about the pitfalls of this creative team, but ultimately they have been pushing Garza Jr. to a main event slot that I think that he's sort of lived up to in the context of what he can live up to. I don't feel like anybody in the current now feels like a main eventer. Everybody just... This being said, look, the main event of this company this time, maybe not this time last year, but this time I praise the main event because it was Drew Galloway and it was Lashley and it was AC3. It was like, you know, these fucking guys that were stars and they were just going after the belt. Right now, you know, Eli Drake is a guy who literally, if you're just looking at storyline and kayfabe wise, he's a mid-carder who now has the belt. You have a brand new guy in Johnny Impact. You have a brand new guy in Garza Jr. It's tough to establish main eventers when you're taking the only main eventer that used to be there, Lashley, and you're sticking him in a feud with another mid-carder and Moose. So that's none of these main event feuds really feel like main event feuds, but when you really just purely look at it in that if the feud for the belt is the main event feud and these guys are the main eventers, Garza Jr.'s been there, and he's been a main event guy, and he looks like it. And I look forward to seeing what he actually looks like in Ottawa. I see if this guy that I would get behind if I was attending the tapings, and it feels like that you would too.
Absolutely. Like I said, hopefully they realize what they have in him. It does seem like they do. And it's all about what they do with him once he's in a situation where the champion is around. When he's moved down to the mid card, what are they going to have him doing? What if he can talk? We have to see some of this from him. If he can't talk out there with the live crowd, some type of backstage, something. We need to see a little bit more personality from him at some point. But as it stands right now, I like the way that they're building him.
Yeah, I agreed 100%. One guy that I don't want to see built up at all is a guy that was the subject of the next promo segment that came up, Alberto El Patron, which we already talked about. We don't need to talk about more, but fuck that guy. So time for the crash, Hayes. The crash out of Mexico. Trevor Lee. I read ahead in my notes there. Trevor Lee is giving a promo in what he calls Tijuana. Tijuana. Mexico.
That's your statesman. That's your fellow North Carolinian.
I was just about to mention, saw that dude in the airport, RDU. Raleigh Durham. I don't know what the U stands for, but I saw him in... Oh, it probably stands for the U in Durham. But I saw him in RDU out in North Carolina one time. It was like 6 a.m. I told you about that back in the day.
Yeah, I do remember that. That's funny.
If people want to go back into the archives and listen to that episode, track down the archives, folks. I mean, because if you could watch the old episodes of Impact, if you find a way to watch the old episodes of Impact, they're probably on that Global Wrestling Network. Go back and watch them from last year, and then come back to the old episodes of Let Me Talk to You. They're all on our website, and you know, you'll be able to experience my episode with you know, seeing Trevor Lee at the airport. Nothing really happened, and I'm just saying you can go back and listen to me talk more about how I saw him in the airport. It's exciting, right? It's a great incentive to go back and watch those episodes.
Our tape library is quickly surpassing the WWE Network.
Well, I mean, they're GWN's going to be sponsoring us here in a fucking hot minute, you best believe. but after that, he ends his promo on I must have zoned out or something, but he ends it on "We are Trevor, and I am confused." I don't know what that means, Hayes.
It means Trevor Lee should just, he's a person who is not very good with the English language, and considering that that's, I mean, his first.
Like, you were not very good with the English language. You were like, he's not very good with the English. Oh, shit, what's that word? language.
I mean, watching Trevor Lee makes you dumber, but he's not
well played.
He's not a very good talker, and I just look at this and I'm like, okay, here we go, Josh. Let's take a step down through the rabbit hole. How would you book Trevor Lee? Well, how would you book him?
How would I book him? I would have him in the X Division matches, have him be a dominant champion, but, you know, in the Neville vein, but I wouldn't be, I would have him as a man, have him have a manager. I couldn't even give you a name as to who would have him as a, have a manager. But shit, there's gotta be some motherfucker out there that can talk it up. Maybe have him in a, you know, if I had to give a name, put him in a stable with Eli Drake, maybe like a champion stable, X Division champ and the global champ, you know, together, Eli Drake, the mouthpiece, put him with Christopher Adonis, and they just run train. I mean, the guy's a monster that should be booked as such, and, you know, just give him a mouthpiece. I do enjoy him as a solo character, but I think that there's potential for him to just be booked in a sort of Neville-esque way, wherein he eventually breaks away from that mouthpiece and becomes his own man. Maybe a face turn, maybe even a heel turn, something like that. But I think that having him be a silent killer right now would do him a lot of good.
Precisely. Either that or have him sign to Titus Worldwide, baby. Other than that, yeah, he needs to be silent. Silent, people. Silent. Trevor Lee, do not talk.
Eventually, he faces a guy named Ultimo Ninja. Now, I've heard of some Ultimos in my life. Have you ever heard of Ultimo Ninja? And probably somebody that's listening to this will probably be like, oh, you don't know about Ultimo Ninja? No, I don't know about Ultimo Ninja. So, hey, do you know anything about this ninja guy who's a ninja in Mexico?
No, not at all. Now I know he's Garza's junior.
He's the cutting edge analysis. You know, sometimes you've got it, and sometimes you don't. But you know, that's why we're here. Hayes, did you have? You're gonna have to take the reins if you took any notes on this match here, because I missed a lot of it. But I did notice a lot of ECW fan cam style shooting here. It was like the hard cam was a nice little HD, but then they cut to the ringside cam, and it looked like someone was recording it off their fucking, you know, LG G2.
Yeah, I'm sure that was a relative of Trevor Lee's footage that Impact just decided to say, hey, we need that. Let me get that. But as far as the
he's
match,
he's got his Appalachian recording team out there in Mexico just to record this low quality camcorder footage.
Yep, that's exactly what it is.
Hell of a budget Trevor Lee's got on there.
Hey, when you don't have to pay for like any type of learning at all, then you know,
or haircuts.
Or haircuts, yeah. I mean, he saves money.
Or razors. I mean, saves a lot. No Dollar Shave Club for that, brother.
But yeah, this match was, I mean, it was okay. It's good that they had the X Division highlight. It's good that they had him doing something. But yeah, it was just here. That's what it felt like. It was just here.
Yeah, it was, you know, that is disappointing because, you know, it was short. It was there. But, I mean, when you have this episode, and like this episode in concept, you zoom out, this is a cool idea, you know, just to have an episode, especially in the context of a show that needs to fill 6 weeks of shows in a series of tapings, have one show dedicated to Impact stars around the world. That's a really cool concept, but they didn't slate this show as such. They didn't introduce this show as, we're going to take you around the world and we're going to look at what Impact stars are doing around the world. You know, kind of like a clip show, but just introducing it as such. This show was just slated as the penultimate episode of Bound for Glory. I mean, of Impact leading into Bound for Glory. I mean, it was just slated as another episode. If you slated this as a showcasing of Impact talent around the world, I think that little tidbits like this would get over a lot better. But this doesn't really play much into what Trevor Lee's aspirations for Bound for Glory are. We're 2 weeks out. The X Division champion is doing. It's a throwaway match in Crash, you know, in Mexico, and it doesn't really feel like it's leading to much, which is highly problematic for Bound for Glory.
Yeah, I mean, we've drilled that point home pretty much. I mean, I think at this point they know. I don't even know if they even expect anything much to come from Bound for Glory or to get many buys from it, because they're just not treating it like a big dip. At least not how like Bound for Glory has been in the past. And it just screams like, why then should I as a fan be invested? This company has an identity crisis, very much so. And it's one that hopefully getting stabilized over in Canada will help every aspect of this company.
Oh, God. You got to hope so. If we report back in a month and it hasn't, RIP. But anyway, we move on. We get some clips from Global Forged. Do you care about that?
No, but you would think they would have to change the name here shortly or just end this shit.
Yeah. We're going to move right on to ATT clips. Kang Mo is cutting some promos. Look, personally, I always liked Kang Mo and Bellator, and I didn't watch Impact when Bellator and Impact were really tight-knit. You know, Tito Ortiz was appearing on Impact. Kang Mo was appearing on Impact. Rampage Jackson was appearing on Impact. That whole Spike TV connection was really strong back in the day. I didn't really watch Impact back then, admittedly. It wasn't, you know... For starters, I wasn't. We'll get into that another day. Anyway, but I'm happy to see Kang Mo cutting promos. I thought his promo was, look, it's rough around the edges, but that's exactly what it should be. Kang Mo is not a professional wrestler. He is a legitimate fighter with a gimmick. He's, you know, he's a gimmick laden legit fighter, which is money if you're a professional wrestling promoter. In my eyes, he's a legitimate fighter who has a sort of character behind him, and so his rough around the edges promos, they're fine. They can be concealable by the everybody knows he's not going out there to cut scripted promos. Shit, he might be going out there and legit shouting his feelings about whoever he's going up against, and to me, that's a nice edge that you have to the Kang Mo character that I think was well shown in this promo. And while this whole feud has had its crazy ups and downs. We're obviously the next match and the main event match that we're going to get into here is all about this American Top Team versus Impact feud, Moose and Lashley. I think it's had its ups and downs, but Kang Mo, if he continues to be a bigger part of this, if this continues beyond Bound for Glory, we get more of Kang Mo, I'd be happy with it, completely honest with you. Do you remember Kang Mo when he was on Impact? And if so, do you have any thoughts on him back then? And if not, do you have any thoughts on him from tonight?
I mean, it was rough. That just flat out, but for all the reasons you mentioned, you should expect it to be rough. And he honestly did a better job than what I would expect most UFC talent to just come in and be able to do. He was pretty good for what it was. He was better than...
Well, yeah, let me be straight. Definitely not a UFC talent. Never would be a UFC talent.
Bellator MMA talent.
And MMA a Bellator talent. At best talent. But yeah,
MMA talent. But yeah, he was okay. More so though, I like what the purpose and the message he was trying to get behind this promo more so than the delivery, and it all made sense. Even though he's technically, from his point of view, Moose is the bad guy, and that's where all good villains are. And I mean, everything he pointed out as far as Moose just walking in the gym, Moose not bowing, like when you're someone of a sport and someone else just comes in and disrespects everything that represents that sport represents to you, of course you take it a little personally. So I like this promo.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Time for the main event. It's main event time. Moose and Stephen Bonner in his corner. Lashley, Dan Lambert in his corner. In accordance with the build for this match, a lot of brawling here. Let me just tell you, I had some comments from my roommates who were watching, which I thought were just great and on point. One of my roommates said, "Why, in accordance to Lashley, why is he wrestling in a headband?" I couldn't tell you. I could not tell you why he's wrestling in a headband. And he also commented, "That old ref is still around." Yeah, that old ref. Earl Hebner still around, and it goes to show these were the things that we were pointing out over the course of this match, because the first half of it, very unentertaining. I'll tell you that. A lot of just kick, punch, throw, pose, kick, punch, throw, pose. Not really great. But Moot, ultimately, my impressions, from this match, this first impression is not a new one. But just, again, reiterating, Moose is fucking athletic. This guy was hitting some great drop kicks and things as such like that. Ultimately, Dan Lambert hit Moose with something. It looked like a trophy or something of the sort. Bonner eventually hit Lashley with a weird reverse Rainmaker thing, which looked absolutely awful. It was a DQ after Lambert hit Moose with it looked like an Emmy Award, weird. It ended after that. American Top Team came out for the beatdown, blah, blah, blah. I will end it with another friend of mine who ended literally as the scene was ending. We were all silent just watching ATT pose, whatever. My buddy goes, "Yo, Moose looks like a brolic CeeLo Green." I'm like, you are not wrong, my friend.
Yeah, I like that. That's spot on.
I mean, come on. It looks like CeeLo Green. It looks like a tatted, muscular CeeLo Green. It's perfect.
Yeah, that should be his new gimmick. Come out in the outfits and everything. Or you get CeeLo Green to come out with him at Bound for Glory dressed as Little Moose.
All right. Little Moose?
Little Moose.
You tell me Little Moose can't be a mini wrestler? Little Moose, Little Lashley, in the Coleman event. Throwing it way back.
Oh, man, that would be hilarious. Little Booker, just bring in Little Booker, too.
Oh, God. We got to stop. We're getting in problematic territory here. Hey, what'd you think of this main event?
It was solid. I don't know. I've come to expect so much more out of Impact main events. I guess I like the story that they were trying to tell here. I appreciated it for what it was, but I just feel like the match could have been a little bit better. But I like the ending. I like the way that they ended the show on that. And, it did enough, I think, to push it forward to the next week. It just sucks that probably the next time we're going to see these guys together like this is going to be Bound for Glory. If it was just a normal show, because I don't know what next week's Impact is going to be, but if this would have been the following or ahead of just a regular episode of Impact, I would be excited for what that next episode was going to be.
I will say one thing. Shortly out of the pay-per-view, look, 2 weeks out, no Knockouts championship coverage on this episode. Not even a segment at all. That's absolutely ridiculous to me. One of the biggest matches on the show, they didn't even get a segment this week, which is just ludicrous to me. And as a show that's supposed to build to Bound for Glory, the show failed in that respect completely. This show, look, if you pace this show 2 months ago, this show is a perfect Impact is not building to a pay-per-view kind of show. This is a perfect mid-taping you know, not important throwaway show. This would be a perfect example of that. However, this is the show that's, you know, we're just shy of Bound for Fucking Glory, and this is what they're throwing out here? Clips from other promotions? Can't even be asked to record more things inside the Impact Zone other than two matches and a segment or two, including Laurel Van Ness feeding children alcohol? For Christ's sakes, people. God, it's just, it's like, look, in a vacuum, this is a great episode. But in the context of what we're supposed to be building towards, this is a failure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's 100% failure. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing left to be said about this. It is a failure as a build to your biggest show of the year. Let's hope that Bound for Glory still ends up being a great show. I have my concerns, but you know, this roster tends to be able to deliver when they need to. Plus, you just got that good old return of Alberto El Patron to look for. No, I can't even fix my mouth to say that joke. Like, fuck Al Patron.
And it's, man, it's disappointing. I think we were both, if we recall back to last year, ultimately when Bound for Glory was said and done, I think we both had super high hopes that weren't exactly met. It's Bound for Glory last year. The company wasn't as hot as it might have been for Slammiversary. I remember both of us were really excited for Slammiversary, and that show was somewhat disappointing as well. But going into Bound for Glory, even if the company wasn't quite as hot as it was for Slammiversary, still plenty to look forward to at Bound for Glory 2016. This year, I don't even feel a fraction of that momentum, of that excitement, and the company was in a worse state this time last year. They need a year for Bound for Glory, and this year they have their finances in order, and they can't even produce a comparable show. It's confounding to me.
Doesn't surprise me. It just doesn't. The way that this company has gone since the rebrand to GFW, I'm not surprised one bit. I kind of expected it. Every time, every show, every time we recorded this podcast, I mentioned, you know, Bound for Glory coming up. Hopefully they get it corrected by Bound for Glory. Hopefully they have something planned by Bound for Glory. Once LAX got the titles taken off of them and they booked OVE to still be complete
OVW.
Shit. To still be complete shit. I've just, my excitement for Bound for Glory has gone down every episode since that moment of LAX losing the titles.
And, I mean, you know what's ultimately going to happen is that it will probably be a show that we have no expectations for, because they've given us no expectations to have, and they might pull out all the stops and make it a great show, and I hope they do. But ultimately, you've got to build better than what they're doing right now. Man, oh man, I can imagine maybe the buy rate would... I can imagine the buy rate will be higher this year than it was last year, in terms of whatever mark that they're setting for selling pay-per-views in this day and age. I don't even know what that would be. But I can imagine that buy rate would be higher this year, but that's purely got to be out of interest because of, you know, stability, out of the new face of the company, new location in Ottawa, just factors that go outside of the product itself. We were just examining the product from last year compared to this year. Man, I willingly spent money on both Slammiversary and Bound for Glory last year, willingly. You know, this year I might be in a tighter situation financially, but God, if they had the same product last year, go at least SmackDown, however much money that they would be asking for Bound for Glory this year. I will do it again this year because we do record this show, but if we weren't recording this show, I'd be hard-pressed to smack to lay that money down for this product, because this has not been a period of shows that really wants to make you buy a pay-per-view. I mean, they should be going to that old show model that was like, we have to sell a pay-per-view. This isn't just a network show that the people are watching the show are going to inevitably watch anyway. We got to sell a fucking pay-per-view. That's the attitude that Impact should be taking right now. It doesn't feel like they're taking that.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it feels like they don't care. It feels like they're just trying to power through this because it was on the schedule and they have to get to it. I honestly, a lot, and because of that, it makes me feel like, okay, maybe we are in for something big once they move over to Canada. Maybe they are just spinning the wheels until they can get to that point because they know the brand or something like that. I don't know. But we say this now, every pay-per-view, every almost every turn, when they're going to do this, are they going to rebrand? They just need to do it at this point. And I hope that getting through Bound for Glory, if Bound for Glory itself isn't that, hopefully Bound for Glory is the close of this GFW chapter. And then we can move over to Anthem Pro Wrestling, Anthem Impact Wrestling, whatever it's going to end up being, and it actually be a fresh start for once, an actual fresh start. I wouldn't mind seeing them adopt an off season just now for this one time and go away for a month and come back completely fresh. I don't know, but something needs to happen. There's a big changes that need to happen in this company.
Well, Hayes, let's close this chapter on Let Me Talk to You Here. Do you have a rating you could throw my way on your thoughts on this episode?
I mean, there are a couple things I enjoyed in this. This is such a hard episode to give a rating to. The best match, we didn't get to see all of it. So that, I don't know how to rate that. I'd say a 5.5.
Well, that's certainly an improvement on what you did last week, eh?
Yeah. Well, last week, I definitely felt last week was worse than this week. And this week wasn't good either.
Well, I thought this week, look, again, if you put it in a vacuum, this week had plenty of shows from all over the world featuring a wide variety of characters. It was, you plop this match in the middle of fucking April when they're not building the shit. Fucking A. It's a great show. But you plop this shit 2 weeks before Bound for Glory. It's not great. So I'm going to give this match 6 Bellator belts out of 10. I didn't think it was great, but again, it was certainly better than last week mostly because of that Noah match. That match between Eddie Edwards and Mara Fuji was fantastic to see on American television. If your Impact, I'll tell you, just steal from Noah more. You'll have a great television product. But that does it for this week of Let Me Talk to You. We've gone on for a long time on an episode that ultimately wasn't worth much. Hayes, where can they find you online?
You can follow me at CEO Hayes. That's at CEOHAI.
Hayes, hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Oh, well, yeah, I already plugged my social media.
Oh, you said HIA. Okay, I just it faded out right there. Okay, cool. And you can find me online at VERLANDJ. That's V as in violin, E-E-R. Wait, no, never mind. Verlin J. You can find me online, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat if you're into that. Look, people, we let off the episode. There's things that we could also be watching. It's, Impact's all right, but it ain't the fucking greatest thing in the world. We need some motivation to go week to week. We're going into Bound for Glory. We're recording this so everybody can be on board. We're going into the WrestleMania of Impact right now. Let us know if you're watching, please, on Twitter, on any of the social medias that you're on Facebook. We're on Facebook. We're everywhere, guys. Just let us know. If you're watching the episodes, let us know. If you're listening to the show, we'd love to hear from you. But, hey, that's all I got. You got any wise words of wisdom? Wise words of wisdom. Nice repetitive nature of this last segment. Any words of wisdom here, Hayes, before we go off the air?
Don't wear pants. There you go. That's my words of wisdom. As much as you possibly can, when socially appropriate, do not wear pants. It's very freeing, it's calming, and it also builds your confidence. Do not wear pants whenever socially acceptable.
And folks, you don't want to know what Hayes thinks is socially acceptable. Good night, everybody, and we'll see you next week. What's funny is we done came up and conquered even the future looking back as I'm Compton to Yonkers. Throw them gangsters grill. I tell them keep that drama away. Don't fuck with these. I like Jason who's sponsoring the tape. They launching out straight. I'm trying not to explain whether it's better or...